This is the March 28 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And John Zanker joins us from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. The markets closed Friday in observance of the Easter holiday. They'll reopen for the regular Monday session on Sunday evening. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org, or search it out in your favorite podcast applications, places like Apple Music, as well as Spotify. May corn was up 2¾ cents on the weekly trade as it ended the week, and the lead option was up 12½ cents as the month closed. December corn posted an outside up week this week, finished 2½ cents higher, and it gained 14½ cents on the month. And the lead option May soybeans finished the week down a penny, but gained 50¾ cents for the month. The harvest month November beans settled the week ¾ cents lower, and the monthly close was 53 cents higher. Thursday, USDA released the quarterly grain stocks reports and prospective planting survey as of March 1st. It showed farmers expect they'll sow just over 90 million acres of corn, 86.5 million acres of soybeans, and right under 47.5 million acres of wheat. Mike Zuzulo, there's a lot in those numbers. Where would you like to start today?
Well, Todd, I guess I should start with a congratulations and a bittersweet piece of news that you delivered that Wayne is going to be semi-retiring. I'd be remiss if I didn't tell him and express to you my admiration for him and coming on as a new person in the late 90s. I remember Wayne as always being super supportive of any panel meetings we did or any Commodity Week meetings we did. He'd always be a voice of support and encouragement, and I hold him in very high esteem, and I wish him and his family a very happy and healthy retirement. He's very much in deserving of that.
Wayne Nelson, of course, has been on the air with WILL for nearly 40 years, Tuesday afternoons at 2:06. I don't know whether you and I will make that far or not, Mike.
I'm kind of hoping not.
We'll see. Of course, you're on Fridays at 2:06 and have been for a very long time now, too. But let's turn our attention to the marketplace. And sure. I really am wondering what it is you thought about those USDA reports as they came out on Thursday morning.
Well, you know, I think the first thing I'd say, Todd, with the acreage report coming in so low compared to the trade estimates on the corn side, I think it removes for now the idea in the trade that the supplies are going to grow even more burdensome in 24-25, that we can have a weather market. A much more likely scenario can develop now where we can have a weather market, especially if we have any kind of planting delays in corn and push those acres up even higher. I'd also say that maybe the probably the most scrutiny will be drawn by analysts and colleagues of mine that will look at the overall principal crop acres of 313 million planted. They probably will say that's out of line because we had 319 last year. I take a different view because the information that the clients I work with told me about the cost of production and the significance of the crop insurance issues and premiums of the base price this year versus last year. And it was just in 2022 that we didn't get over 311 million principal acres. So I don't think the USDA is out of whack or out of the range at all in that respect. So I think these acreage numbers are very valid. It may be the smallest corn acreage number that we see, depending on planting, but I think the trade reacted very much as it should, with the idea that the beans had too much premium in them. The corn did not have enough. So I just hope that continues as we come back from the holiday. I also hope that the wheat and the corn lead the beans higher once we come back from the holiday. I think that makes it a much stronger market that we could form maybe a better trend off of.
I'll stay with you for just a second. I want to know whether your clients gave you an indication based on where they're located, where these acreage shifts might have occurred. And by acreage shifts, I mean out of both corn, soybeans, and wheat, for that matter, cotton too, I suppose.
They did. And I didn't go state by state at this point in time to match up what my acreage numbers were with the clients and what they told me. But I felt as though the central corn belt, Illinois, Iowa, western half of Indiana would be probably bigger corn, especially if the weather was conducive because of the profitability and the yields. But Kentucky, Ohio, eastern Indiana, western corn belt areas that are not irrigated, all of them talked about moving more towards the beans. And it was interesting, University of Kentucky looked at a 175 corn yield and a 54 bushel bean yield and ended up showing that you could make about $83 an acre gross revenue in the corn versus $194 an acre gross revenue. And that came after I'd gotten this information from clients. So I think it jives pretty well that the two edges or the two western eastern sides of the corn belt, maybe we'll see a little bit more beans because of the profitability and the less cost of production profitability, meaning that base price from crop insurance included.
Risk management commodities, John Zanker. I'll make note that North Dakota farmers suggest that they're planting 111% of their soybean acreage from last year, but 6% less on their corn. I suppose that jives with what we're hearing and seeing in the USDA report and from Mike Zuzulo. As you looked at these numbers, what were your takeaways?
Well, I was very pleased to see the corn acreage number, 90.03 trade estimate was about 1.77 above that, which surprised me the trade would come in that high. But I think especially with the Ag Forum being 91 million last month. So I was surprised with the trade estimate. But I think, you know, we started to get excited about an early spring and lots of field work being done and anhydrous being put down in the month of March. And I think the trade got sucked into that a little bit. And you know, many years ago, when we had good weather into late April and May, maybe we added some corn acres, but I think we've moved past that. And I still hear that talk, but you know, most farmers have what they're going to do plugged into the computers already, and they're planting beans about as early as they're planting corn. So we're not going to see an acreage shift if we plant early. So just from a profitability standpoint, if you look at acreage from 2 years ago, it made sense that we'd flip back and, you know, add quite a few bean acres and lose some corn acres. I was equally pleased that given the drop in corn acres that the beans still came in at 86.5. When I first saw that 90.03 in corn, I thought, you know, we're going to have an 87 point something in beans and we're going to get hit hard in beans, and lo and behold, they left that number unchanged, and beans had a good day. Corn had a great day. And Mike, I think that 6 million acreage loss probably went to solar panel fields and warehouses.
You know, the solar, I think you're right, John, in all seriousness. I think the solar and some of the other add-ons nowadays with the subsidies, that it's really been attractive between the wind and the solar. I've had several people tell me they were, you know, between CRP and solar, I buy into these acreage numbers for the most part.
We'll have to track that a bit to see how it happens. But my understanding of the contracts for solar and for wind is that if you're a landowner, especially if you're not a landowner, if you're only a landowner and not a farmer, you can reap about 4x the profit off of those acres. So that does not surprise me. And I'm sorry I interrupted you, John.
Oh, no, that's okay. But I was just going to say, just on the north side of Lebanon, for those that don't know where that is, that's about 30 miles north of Indianapolis. And we're losing about 7,000 acres a farm ground to development. So it's happening, and you know, we're going to see some acreage reductions. So when I look at that corn number, and I agree 100% with what Mike said, this sets things up a little bit differently. My friend Jody Lawrence, who is also an analyst, he came up with this number, and for Dease Corn, 32 out of the last 34 years, These futures have come back and exceeded the January high. And the January high this year occurred on January 2nd at about 502 and three quarters. And beans, even more impressive, 33 out of 34 years, November futures have come back and exceeded the January high, which I believe was 1237, and we got to 1227, 1228 today. So I think this report sets up some additional gains going into that April-June period, which has historically been a pretty good opportunity to get some forward pricing done for the new crop and get the old crop wrapped up. So and just one other thing on the acreage here, spring wheat 11.3 exceeding expectations by quite a bit. I think that I'm surprised to see that number, and you just talked about North Dakota. I think that we're going to see an increase in bean acres from this 86.5 eventually. And some and quite a bit of that, not most of it, will come from that spring number. So I could see that spring acreage number falling about 800,000, 750,000, 800,000 from there. Most of that's going to go to soybeans. So overall, like what I see here today, and stocks report was a little friendly corn, slightly bearish beans, so and a little bearish wheat.
It's interesting, in fact, Mike, that the stocks report is a little friendly corn. That's because the trade expected the number that I think came out. It was, as of March 1, 8.347 billion bushels, nearly a billion bushels more than was on hand last year. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that. I think the big number there, though, is that 5 billion of what's still available is in the hands of farmers on the farm, and just 3.268 are off the farm.
Yeah, both corn and bean on farm stocks up 24% from a year ago. I found that interesting that they're both identical. That usually doesn't happen that way. We're usually selling more aggressively one or the other. I think the thing about the corn, just to dovetail with what John had to say, because I think that's 100% right on, because of the fact that the trade has been under this impression that we have too much supply and not enough demand. But between the exports and the still pretty strong ethanol grind, it would have made sense that the corn would have looked better than the beans, because we've really suffered in the bean export front. And I think that's probably still the biggest issue that I face in the analysis heading forward here, Todd, is the fact that if AgroConsult is right, and I think that got traded a lot before the report came out in the soybean markets, and that's why we were making new multi-week lows. And in fact, soybeans ended up on the week for a second straight week lower, whereas lead month wheat was up a third straight week, corn up a fifth straight week. But those AgroConsult numbers jumping from 152 plus to 156 plus in soybean production for Brazil, that makes the USDA a lot more right than wrong. And we have to really second guess ourselves in the private trade whether we're really going to see any more cuts for Brazil's soybean production in this upcoming WASD. So beans still look vulnerable to me, and that's why I want that wheat and the corn to perform.
Do you think they can?
I think they can. I always go back to the currencies, and this week was a big week in the currencies, in that the Japanese yen made a new 34-year low against the U.S. dollar. And what's starting to happen is the People's Bank of China and the Bank of Japan are starting to form a race to the bottom in their currencies to preserve their exports. They're competing with one another, and South Korea is right there in the mix. Well, Japan, South Korea, what, number one, number two in terms of what they buy in terms of U.S. beef. So this is a big deal, and I think that's the underlying issue as to whether we can keep this trend going or not, is those currencies as we get into the springtime especially.
Why would the devaluation of their currencies result in higher prices at the board?
No, I'm saying the exact opposite. If we want the wheat and the corn to go higher, we need those currencies in Asia to go higher and go lower, and the dollar go lower. And so what we saw this week was not a supportive feature. And I would say that, again, doubles back to the soybeans. How can we compete with Brazil when the real's weakening and the Chinese yuan's weakening as well? That just hurts us on both ends of the currency spectrum.
Okay, that makes more sense to me.
Sorry about that.
I just had that in the opposite direction in my mind for some reason. So for some clarification's sake, you are in what position, not actual position, but thinking about which direction corn, soybeans, and wheat might go. And then I'll follow up with the same question for you, John. It's basically, are you friendly, bullish, or bearish to each of these markets? Mike?
Yeah, my answer was clients and subscribers got a text message today saying if we weren't above 1190 at noon Central Time and no beans, move ahead with more 24 bean hedges. We pulled that because the price was 1191.5 or thereabouts. I think John is really onto something in both 2014 and 2021, and every year's different. I got to say that, and I believe that. But in terms of the potential for April 2014 and 2021, if you look at Dease Corn and Nove Beans, we look a lot like those 2 years compared to Nove 21 and Nove 14 and Dease 14 and Dease 21 futures. And in both those years, April had a good showing. We had some chances to sell in April. So I'm going to be more aggressive on beans and be less aggressive on corn. If I could get the 505, 515 Dease Corn, I would really start looking at getting some floors underneath me.
And John?
Yeah, pretty much agree 100% with that. We've been, heavily sold on soybeans since last summer, and been wrapped up for quite a while now. Now, before I could pat myself on the back for that, probably should point out that I've been underpriced on corn through that whole time, and we did some catching up here on the recent rally. But I think that most farmers, most analysts, we're not where we'd like to be with corn sales. So, and certainly not much on the new crop. So, that's going to continue to be a weight overhead, and it's going to be tough to get through that. We're going to have a weather scare of magnitude to push futures sharply higher. Now, again, history would say that we're going to get a chance. And along with Mike, I would say that we're certainly eyeing that. If I can be patient and wait that long, waiting for that $5 area to get very serious about some new crop pricing, and that would include cash sales, hedge derives, and such, and getting some major floors set under here with some options. Because if we're way past due, and Todd, you've heard me talk about this probably the last 2 years at least, saying, hey, we're way past due for a breakout in yield. And we haven't had that yet, but if you look back at last summer, we had some rough stretches of weather in different areas of the Corn Belt and still ended up with a record yield. So if we could have one of those near perfect growing seasons, and the last one of those was in 2004, if we get that, we could skip right over the 180s and go into the low 190s with national yield. And I know that sounds dramatic, but we've actually had that kind of a percentage increase over record before. And again, 2004 was the last year that we did that. So I think we need to get floor soybeans and even potentially worse outlook. We could add 1 million more acres, and we're very capable of doing a 54 national yield if we could just get a good August across the Corn Belt. But again, we've really struggled with that for the past several years. So you add 1 million acres, you add 2 to 3 bushels to the national yield, and we're looking at a carryout that's pushing 600 million. And you're going to have a tough time keeping the 10 in front of futures at that point.
Mike, I know you've given us some targets on corn, old crop corn in particular. Farmers who have it in the bin on the farm, and again, 5 billion bushels were there as of March 1st. Their interest charge is mounting fairly quickly each and every month. If they have it in the elevator, you have to add the in charge each month too. How do you calculate that all into how quickly they need to make a decision?
Well, I mean, certainly before the July futures goes off the board is going to be the make or break for me this year, Todd, because of the fact that the world stocks should start to play a role. And the world stocks, and I'll go back to what you and I talked a lot about, the world stocks to use ratios of wheat are at a 10-year low. Today's numbers are not going to change that. The U.S. ending stocks for wheat are the second lowest since 2014, and only just below last year's level. If it were below last year's level, we'd be at the lowest level in 10 years. And so I think at some point, and this is where the outside markets come back, if some point the outside markets get that fund investment underneath them through the currencies and lack of fear about the U.S.-China trade relationship, then I think the wheat could lead the corn higher maybe than what we're thinking. So I don't want to say that the old crop corn can't get back up to 5.25 to 5.40, because if the wheat could really start to move, I think it's that undervalue from both the supply demand standpoint and how the funds look at it. So that would be it for me, an easy sale if we get back up there. But that's I think a rational mindset because of how tight we are on wheat supplies. And we have one thing standing in our way, and it's called the U.S. dollar against the Russian ruble, essentially, or the U.S. dollar against the Chinese currency.
I think I'll turn finally to your last words here on the idea that we've covered a lot of ground, and I want to know what else you're thinking about, John Zanker, as we finish up our program.
Well, I just think it's very important in looking at the cost of productions and the net revenue, and as you pointed out, or Mike pointed out earlier, what the difference in revenue is on corn and soybeans, that getting a floor set in this spring is extremely important. And $12 beans, not nearly as pretty sounding as the 14 and the 15 that we've seen in recent years, but the bull market's come to an end. And if that Brazilian crop doesn't shrink anymore, we have a lot more beans in South America than we did a year ago due to a 24, 25 million ton increase in Argentina. So the downside's serious from here, and it's at least $2 on the November contract should we come in with a record yield on heavy acreage. So, and with corn, you get up into that $5 area, maybe getting floors set in 450 to 475. That's not going to be a horrible price if we have big yields. So we're on the defensive. We've been, it was okay being on the offensive here for the past 3 years, but the bull market's done for now. And it's only going to be brought back if we have a severe weather problem this summer.
And Mike Zuzulo?
Yeah, I think that is, I can't improve upon that. I mean, that's just really where we're at right now until the funds come back. And, that's the funds versus the fundamentals in terms of how the trade thinks right now, Todd. And we have a shot at putting major lows in place. But again, is it going to be based upon demand? And it seems a lot less likely right now because of the U.S.-China trade relationship and the U.S. election coming up and the frictions that we have in the global trade. So we once again have to rely upon weather and supply to get our hedging done. And that hasn't changed. And when it does, I'm sure John and I will both be calling the shots saying, hey, it's changing, because nobody wants it more than us. That's the bottom line.
Mike Zuzulo, of course, is with GlobalComResearch.com. John Zanker is with Risk Management Commodities. The two of them joined us for our Commodity Week program. It was recorded on Thursday, March the 28th. You can find it online at willag.org, willag.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.